Three Lives by Tuesday Love Sang Grandpa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 2. Come on now, come on, stick out your arm, no nonsense with you, come on, get a move on. The voice was commanding, shrill and insistent. Leonidas Manuel Molly Grubber stirred slightly, and then came to a blurred awareness as his arm was roughly grasped and pulled from under the sheets. "I don't know what you're putting up such a resistance for," said the voice, irritably. "I've got to get some blood out of you. Now, come on, no nonsense." Old Molly Grubber opened his eyes a bit wider and peered around him. Above him, on his left-hand side, a woman was standing, scowling down at him. He turned his glance to a wire basket thing standing on the table by his bedside. The basket was something like the things milkmen carry around, he thought, but where the milkmen had bottles of milk stashed away, this basket had a lot of test tubes with cotton on the top of them. "Well, you've returned to us, eh? Well, come on with you. You're wasting my time." With that, the woman roughly pulled up his pajama sleeve and put something around his arm. It looked like a bit of black rubber to him. Then she tore open the little packet, took something out of that, and vigorously scrubbed his skin. There was a sharp pain, and he jumped. And the woman said, "Oh, damn and blast, why can't you have your veins up properly? Now I've gone and stuck it right through." She pulled out the needle, tightened up the tourniquet around his arm, and then took another jab. Molly Grubber looked down bemusedly and saw a big tube, a glass test tube, attached to a needle going into his arm. As he watched, the tube filled up. Quickly, with the deftness of long practice, the woman detached that tube and put on another, which also filled. Then, satisfied at last with the supply of blood, she yanked out the needle and slapped an elastoplast patch over the perforation. With a grunt, she put the two tubes in her wire basket after carefully writing his name on them. The woman moved on to another bed, and her snarling, whining voice rasped the other patient's nerves. Molly Grubber looked about him and saw that he was in a room with five other patients. Then his sight blurred, and his breath became difficult, and for a time again he knew nothing. The clattering noise disturbed him. There seemed to be the clatter of dishes and the rumble and squeak of a big trolley being pushed along. Slowly, painfully, he opened his eyes again, and just outside the door of the ward, right opposite his bed, he saw a gleaming chromium contraption which seemed to be loaded with chromium-plated cabinets. As he looked, a nurse came from somewhere and started handing out little trays on which were food, each tray labeled with the name of a patient. An orderly came over to him and looked down and said, "Well, how do you feel now?" Old Molly Grubber grunted in reply because he just felt too worn out to talk, and as he vaguely thought to himself, surely any fool could see that he was feeling pretty sick. The orderly unhooked some things from the back of the bed and said, "Just put your left arm out straight. I'm going to take your blood pressure." He felt an increasing constriction around his upper arm, and then he saw the orderly with stethoscopes in his ears. In his right hand he had a rubber bulb which he was squeezing. Molly Grubber dozed off again and awakened once more as the pressure around his upper arm was released. "Okay," said the orderly, Dr. Fleabottom will be along soon. I believe he's just starting his rounds. See you. The orderly moved about, going from patient to patient. Well, what's wrong with you, old fellow? What's wrong with your breakfast this morning, eh? He asked one man. Molly Grubber saw that the man had a long pole thing beside him, on which was suspended a little bottle with tubes coming from it. He asked feebly, "What's that guy having done?" "Oh, that's an IV drip," said the orderly. "He's having a saline solution put into him to buck up his ideas." The room faded again, and Molly Grubber could hear his own rasping breath, which seemed to be echoing in a vast distance. Once again he was disturbed. He felt a hand at his throat, and then he realized that his pajama buttons were being unfastened. "What's wrong with this fellow?" asked a male voice, and Molly Grubber opened his eyes and looked up. He saw what was obviously a doctor with his white coat on, and above his left breast he had the words "Dr. Fleabottom" written in embroidery stitches. "Oh, doctor, this man was brought in, and the paramedic said he had double pneumonia, so we're waiting for you to examine him." The doctor scowled and said, "Oh, so the paramedics are setting themselves up as diagnosticians now. Well, I'll look into that." He bent down and applied his stethoscope to Molly Grubber's chest. Then, letting the earpiece dangle, he tapped hard with the forefinger and quickly listened in to the sound. "I think you'll have to go for an X-ray. His lungs seem to be pretty full of fluid. See to it, will you, nurse?" The doctor bent down over what was obviously Molly Grubber's chart, and then wrote something and went on to the next patient. Molly Grubber dozed. There was the sound of voices, and Molly Grubber opened his eyes again and looked up. There was a nurse and an orderly bringing a wheeled stretcher to the side of his bed. Somewhat roughly, he was pushed to one side of the bed, and the edge of the stretcher was slid under him. Then, with a quick flip, like a man landing a big fish, he thought, he was eased on to the stretcher, and the orderly quickly shoved a sheet over him, and they went trundling down along the corridor. "What happened to you, old fellow?" asked the orderly. "Oh, I don't know," said Molly Grubber. "I went into cold water yesterday and didn't get a chance to dry off, so then I got too hot and then I got too cold and I fell down or something, because when I woke up I found I was in that ward. Gee, I do get a pain in my chest. Isn't anyone going to do anything for me?" The orderly whistled through his teeth and then said, "Oh, yes, for sure. We're going to do something for you, all right, and you'd better believe it. We're taking you to X-ray just now, aren't we? What do you think we're doing it for if we're not going to help you, There was a clatter and a bump, and the stretcher came to rest against the wall. "There you are," said the orderly, backing off. "They'll come and wheel you in when they're ready for you. It's been a busy day already. Looks to be one of those rush, rush, rush days. Dunno why I stay in this racket." With that, he turned and hurried off down the corridor with the glass sides. Old Molly Grubber just lay there for what seemed hours. All the time it was getting more and more painful to breathe. At last, a door opened violently, and a nurse came out pushing another stretcher. "It's back to the ward for you," she said to the woman on the stretcher. "I'll leave you here. Someone will come and collect you when they've got time." With that, she took the stretcher past old Molly Grubber and turned to him, saying, "Well, you're next, I suppose. What's wrong with you?"
"Can't breathe. That's what's wrong with me," said Molly Grubber.
The old woman grabbed a stretcher and with what seemed to be unnecessary force swiveled it round through the doorway and into a dark, dark room. There was barely enough light to see your hand in front of your face, but Molly Grubber, peering about, could see that there were strange metal tubes and chromium pieces and wires going everywhere, and at one side of the room there was what seemed to be a cashier's desk in a cinema. The woman pushed him up against what appeared to be a table, but instead of being a straight table, it was curved a bit.
"What's wrong with this one?" asked a voice, and a young girl came out from behind the glass cabinet thing.
"I've got his chart here. Suspect double pneumonia. Chest x-ray back and front." Together, the young girl and the nurse grabbed old Molly Grubber, pushed the stretcher tighter against the table, and with a sliding swoosh, he was pushed straight onto that chromium-plated table with the curving surface.
"Ever been x-rayed before?" asked the young girl.
"No, never dunno know anything about it," said Molly Grubber.
"Okay, we'll soon get you fixed," said the girl. "There you are. Lie on your back. Just do what you're told. That's all we want." She fiddled about, altering the height of a big box which seemed to be suspended on chromium tubes. She pressed buttons, and there was a little light, and onto his chest she projected what seemed to be an X. Then, being satisfied with her adjustments, she said, "Don't move now. You stay there, and when I say breathe, you breathe deeply and hold it. Understand?"
"Yes, I understand. You tell me when to hold it, then," said Molly Grubber.
The young girl turned and went away behind the cashier's desk thing. After a moment or two, she yelled out, "All right, hold it, hold it," and there came a sort of hissing. Then the young girl said, "Okay, breathe." She came out to the side of the table, and she seemed to be opening drawers or something. Molly Grubber could just see that she had a big metal box in her hands, bigger than his chest. She fiddled about with the metal box, and then she took another one, and she slipped it under the table on which he lay, and she said, "Now, we've got to turn you over on your face." She grabbed him and turned him over, jiggling him about so that he was in exactly the right position. Once again, there came the fiddling around with that black box. Once again, there came the little light which projected the X on him, and then, satisfied with that, she walked away to the glass cubicle place, and once again came that command to hold your breath, okay? Let it out. It went on for some time. Molly Grubber lost count of the number of x-rays that were taken, but at last the woman came back to him and said, "Okay, I'll just push you outside now, and you'll have to stay there until we see if these films have come out all right. If not, we'll fetch you in again. If they have, you'll be pushed back to your ward." With that, she opened the door and just pushed the stretcher out. Molly Grubber thought it was very much like locomotives shunting trucks, and in this hospital they seemed to have no more compunction or compassion for the patients. Everything seemed to be slap-bang, slap-bang. After what seemed to be a long, long time, a small girl, she looked to be about 14 years of age, came along, shuffling her feet and sniffling away as if she had a terrible head cold.
Without a word to Molly Grubber, she grabbed the end of his stretcher and pushed. The stretcher moved, and with the sniffling girl as his mode of propulsion, Molly Grubber traversed the corridor again, and eventually reached the ward whence he had originally come. The girl gave the stretcher a final push and said, "There you are, he's all yours." She walked off. The stretcher rolled along a bit and ended with a bump against the far wall. No one took any notice, but eventually the orderly came and pushed the stretcher to old Molly Grubber's bedside, saying, "Okay, it's all over. The doctor will be along again in about an hour. Hope you last all right till then." Molly Grubber was slid along on the stretcher until once again he was in his own bed. The orderly pulled the sheet up to his chin and in a leisurely manner pulled the stretcher out of the ward. An orderly came rushing in and skidded to a stop by old Molly Grubber's bed. "You pulled the kid out of the water yesterday?" he asked, in what was meant to be a whisper, but which sounded all around the ward.
"Yes, I guess I did," said Molly Grubber.
"Well, the mother is here. She demanded to see you, but we said you couldn't see her, you're too ill. She's a troublemaker." At that moment, heavy footsteps were heard, and a woman came into the ward with a policeman.
"You, him there," said the woman angrily. "He stole my little girl's hat yesterday."
The policeman moved forward and looked sternly at Molly Grubber, saying, "This lady tells me that you snatched her child's hat yesterday and threw it in the water."
"Oh, what a lie," said the old man. "I pulled the child out of the water, and everyone else was just hanging around watching her drown. The mother did nothing at all to help her. I didn't see any hat. What do you think I'd done with it? Eat it?"
The policeman looked around, then turned back to the old man. "You saved the child from the water? You were the fellow I've been hearing about?"
"Yes, I guess so," was the reply.
"Well, you didn't tell me about this," said the policeman, turning to the woman. "You didn't tell me he'd pulled your kid out of the water. What sort of a mother are you to stand by and then make such accusation against the man who saved her?" The woman stood there turning red and white with anger, and then she said, "Well, someone must have got the hat. The child hasn't got it, and I haven't got it, therefore he must have it." The policeman thought for a moment and then said, "I want to go to the nurse's station. I want to phone the superintendent." And with that, he turned and went out to the nurse's station by the elevator bank. Soon after, he could be heard talking, saying a lot of "yes, sir," and "no, sir," and "okay, I'll do that, sir." Then he turned to the ward and said to the woman, "I'm told that if you persist in this nonsense, I'm going to charge you with effecting public mischief, so you'd better cancel your charge, or you're going to come along with me, and the superintendent is feeling mighty cross with you, I can tell you." Without a word, the woman turned and stalked out of the ward, followed a moment after by the policeman. Old Molly Grubber looked absolutely sickened by all the commotion. His breath rasped even more in his throat, and the orderly came to him, looked down at him, and then pressed the emergency button at the head of the bed. Soon the chief nursing sister of the floor came in to look at old Molly Grubber, and she hurried out. Then she could be heard telephoning to the doctor on duty. Old Molly Grubber dozed off, having various vivid dreams from which he was disturbed by someone unbuttoning his pajama jacket. "Pull over the curtains, nurse. I want to have a look at his chest," said a male voice. The old man looked up and saw a different doctor who, seeing that the patient was awake, said, "You've got fluid on your lungs, fluid in your pleura. We're going to have to tap it to get some of the water off." Another doctor came in, this time a woman, and a nurse wheeled a tray on wheels up to the bed. The doctor said, "Now, can you sit up? We've got to get at your ribs." The old man tried, but no, he was too weak. So they fixed him up by having a blanket beneath his feet and what looked like a rolled sheet going under him and tied to the head of the bed. So he was in a sitting position and not able to slip down. The woman doctor got busy with the hypodermic and kept injecting something around the left-hand side of Molly Grubber. She waited a few moments and then pricked him with a needle. "No, he doesn't feel it. It's all ready," she said as she stepped back. A nurse was busy with a large glass jar which had a nozzle at the top and a nozzle at the bottom. She carefully fixed rubber tubing to the top and the bottom and put spring clips on them. Then, as she held the thing up to the light, Molly Grubber saw that it was full of water. When she was satisfied, she hung the bottle to the side of the bed, just below the bottom of the mattress. Then she stood by with the end of the tube in her hands. The far end of the tube coming from the bottom of the bottle went to a bucket. The doctor was busy fiddling with something. He had his back to old Molly Grubber, and then, satisfied with the results of what he'd been doing, he turned around, and the old man nearly fainted with shock when he saw the immense needle or tube which the doctor was handling. "I'm going to put this trocar in between your ribs, and I'm going to tap off the fluid in the pleura. Then, when we've done that, we shall give you artificial pneumothorax. That will collapse your left lung, but we've got to get the fluid off first. It won't hurt much," he said. With that, he approached Molly Grubber and slowly pushed the steel tube between his ribs. The sensation was awful. The old man felt as if his ribs were being caved in. He felt that with every thrust his heart was going to go up into his mouth. The first place was unsuccessful, so the doctor tried another and another, until in the end, in a thoroughly bad mood at his failure, he gave a quick jab, and a yellow fluid gushed out and onto the floor. "Quick that tube," and then he pushed the tube on the end of the steel needle. "This trocar seems to be quite blunt," he remarked as he went on feeling around Molly Grubber's chest. The nurse knelt beside the bed, and soon after Molly Grubber could hear water running. The woman doctor, seeing his astonishment, said, "Oh yes, we use this trocar in between your ribs, and we insert it into a pocket of fluid in the pleura. And then, when we have struck fluid, we release the two clips on that bottle you saw, and the weight of the water, distilled, sterile water, running out, draws the fluid out of your lungs by suction. We'll have you better in no time," she said, with an assurance that she by no means felt. The old man was getting paler and paler, although goodness knows he had little enough color before. The doctor said, "Here, nurse, hold this." Then he turned away to the table again, and there was the clink of metal and glass, after which he came back to the patient and with one quick movement shoved the needle in what Molly Grubber was sure was his heart. He thought he was going to die on the spot. For a moment he experienced intense shock, and then a feeling of heat and a tingling, and he could feel his heart beating more strongly. A little color came back to his pinched cheeks. "Well, that made you feel better, eh?" asked the doctor, jovial again. "Do you think we should give him an IV?" said the woman doctor. "Yes, perhaps we should. Get me the things, nurse. We'll do it now," said the male doctor, as he fiddled about with various tubes. The nurse bustled away and returned, pushing what looked to be a long pole with a crook at the end of it. The other end had wheels on it. She wheeled it up to Molly Grubber's right side, and then bent and lifted a bottle onto the hook at the top of the rod. She connected some rubber tubing and gave the end to the doctor, who carefully inserted another needle in Molly Grubber's right arm. The nurse released the spring clip, and Molly Grubber had the peculiar sensation of something running from the tube into his veins. "There," said the doctor, "we'll have you better in no time. Just remain quiet." The old man nodded his head and then slipped off into another doze. The doctor looked down at him and said, "He doesn't look too good to me. We shall have to watch him." With that, the two doctors moved out of the ward, leaving a nurse to do the rest of the work. Much later, when the day began to come to a close, a nurse woke up the old man and said, "There, there, you're looking a lot better now. It's time you had a little something to eat, isn't it?" The old man nodded dumbly. He did not feel like food, but the nurse insisted. She put a tray on the table beside his bed and said, "Come on, I'm going to feed you. No nonsense now. We've worked too hard on you to lose you now." And with that, she began to spoon food into Molly Grubber's mouth, hardly giving the poor old fellow time to swallow before she started in with another lot. At that moment, the policeman entered the ward and pushed his way through the curtains to Molly Grubber's bed. "I'm keeping the press off you," he said. "Those hyenas have been trying to storm the hospital. They want headlines about Street Cleaner Saves Child. And we've told them you're too ill to be seen. Do you want to see them?" The old man nodded as emphatically as he could, and then mumbled, "No, bad cess to them. Can't they allow a fellow to die in peace?" The policeman looked at him laughing and said, "Oh, you've got plenty of life left in you yet, old fellow. You'll soon be out with that barrow of yours again, sweeping up after all these people. But we'll keep the press away from you. We've threatened that we'll take action against them if they come here, as you are just too ill." He turned and went out of the ward, and the nurse continued with her feeding until the old man thought the food would be coming out of his ears. About an hour later, the doctor came back, looked at him, and then bent down to examine the bottle beneath the bed. "Ah," he said, "we seem to have got it all out from that pocket. Now we're going to pump in a little air, and that will collapse the lung. You see, we put air into the pleura, and that pushes the lung inwards so that you can't breathe with this one. It's got to be rested a bit. I'm going to give you some oxygen as well." He put his head out through the curtains and said, "You fellows will all have to stop smoking. You can't smoke in here while we've got an oxygen tent going." There was a lot of angry talk from the other patients, and one said, "Why should we give up our pleasure just for him? What's he done for us?" Deliberately, the man lit a fresh cigarette. The doctor went out to the nurse's station and telephoned somewhere. Soon an orderly arrived, an old mollygrubber in his bed and with the IV attachment still in place, was slowly pushed out of the ward and into a private room. "There," said the doctor, "now we can give you oxygen without any of those so-and-sos trying to cause a fire. You'll be all right." Soon the oxygen tent was put in place, and a tube was connected to the oxygen outlet in the wall of the room. Soon mollygrubber felt the benefits of the oxygen. His breathing improved, and he felt generally a lot better. "We'll keep you on this all night," said the doctor, "and tomorrow you should be a lot better." And with that, he left the room. Once again, the old man slept, this time more comfortably. But later in the evening, another doctor came in, examined him carefully, and then said, "I'm going to pull this trocar out now. We've properly dried out this particular spot. We'll have you x-rayed again in about an hour's time, and then we can decide what to do next." He turned and went out, but then came back, saying, "Don't you have any relatives? Who do you want us to get in touch with?" Mollygrubber said, "No, I don't have anybody at all in the world. I'm on my own. But I hope my old barrel will be all right." The doctor laughed and said, "Oh, yes, your barrel is all right. City cleaning have taken it back to what they call the depot. Your barrel is being looked after, and now we've got to look after you. You have a sleep." Before he reached the door, mollygrubber was asleep, dreaming of irate mothers demanding new hats for their children, dreaming of feral press reporters swarming over his bed. He opened his eyes in some astonishment and found a night orderly was disconnecting him from the IV apparatus and getting ready to take him down to X-ray again. "May I come in? I'm a priest." The voice was melancholy in the extreme. Old mollygrubber opened his eyes and gazed with some confusion at the figure standing before him, a very tall, exceptionally thin man, dressed all in black except for his clerical collar above, which his very prominent Adam's apple bobbed up and down as if trying to escape from such a scrawny throat. The face was pallid, with sunken cheeks and a most prominent red nose. The priest looked down at mollygrubber and then sat on a chair beside the bed. "I am a priest, and I'm studying psychology here so that I may minister to the sick in the hospital. I was trained in the Maritimes." Mollygrubber frowned, and indeed scowled, and then he said, "Oh, I was trained in Calgary on the city rubbish dump." The priest looked at him and said most earnestly, "I am distressed beyond all measure. to note that on your admittance form it was stated, "You were of no known religion. Now I have come to bring God to you." The old man scowled more and more and said, "God? Why do I want to hear your pratings about God? What's God ever done for me? I was born an orphan," he said, with a remarkable disinclination to sort out what could be and what could not be. "My mother had nothing to do with me, and I didn't know who my father was. Could have been one of 100 men, I suppose. I was on my own for as long as I can remember. In the early days I was taught to pray, and I prayed. Nothing ever came of it, until in the end I got a job shifting garbage at the city dump." The priest looked down his nose and twiddled his fingers, and eventually he said, "You're in a very perilous position with this illness which you have. Are you prepared to meet your Maker?" Molly Grubber looked straight at the man and replied, "How do I know who's my Maker? It could have been any one of 100 men, as I told you. You don't think God came down and fashioned me out of dough, do you?" The priest looked shocked and scandalized and even more melancholy as he replied, "You are scorning God, my brother. No good will come of this. You are scorning God. You should be prepared to meet your Maker, to meet your God. For in a short time, maybe you'll have to go and face God and His judgment. Are you prepared?" Molly Grubber replied truculently, "Do you really believe all that jive about another life?" "Of course I do. Of course I do," said the priest. "It's written in the Bible, and everyone knows that you believe what's in the Bible." The old man replied, "Well, I don't. I read quite a bit when I was young. In fact, I used to go to Bible class, and then I found out what a phony the whole affair was. When you're dead, you're dead, that's what I say. You die and you get stuck in the ground somewhere, and if you got any folks, which I ain't, then they comes along and they puts flowers in a jam pot and shove it on top of you. No, you'll never convince me there's another life after this. I wouldn't want one, anyhow." The priest rose to his feet in his agitation and paced backwards and forwards, across the room until Molly Grubber was almost dizzy with this black form, like the angel of death, fluttering before his eyes. "I once looked through the pages of a book by a guy what lives near where I've been working, fellow called Rampa. He wrote a lot of crap, too, about living after you're dead. Well, everybody knows it's all rubbish. When you're dead, you're dead. And the longer you stay dead, the worse you stink. I picked up a few stiffs in my time, drunks and the like, and after a time, phew, you can't get near 'em." The priest sat down again and solemnly wagged a forefinger at old Molly Grubber, and then he said with some anger, "You will suffer for this, my man. You will suffer for this. You are taking God's name in vain. You are mocking the Holy Book. You can be sure that God will wreak His wrath upon you." Molly Grubber ruminated a moment, and then he said, "How come you guys talk about a good God, a Father God who loves all His children, shows them mercy, compassion, and all the rest of that stuff, and then, in the next breath, you say, God will wreak His vengeance? How come?
How can you explain that? And then another thing you've got to answer, mister. Your book says, unless you embrace God, you go to hell. Well, I don't believe in hell either. But if you are only saved if you embrace God, what about all the folks on earth before your particular form of God? What do you make of that, eh? The priest stood up again, his voice shaking with anger, his face turning red with emotion. He shook his fist at Molly Grubber and he said, "Look here, my man, I am not accustomed to being spoken to by people like you. Unless you embrace the teachings of God, you will be struck down dead." He moved forward, and Molly Grubber thought the man was going to strike him. So, with a supreme effort, he sat up in bed. There was a sudden, terrible pain across his chest, as if his ribs were being crushed. His face turned blue and he fell back with a gasping sob, and his eyes stayed half closed. The priest turned pale, rushed to the door. "Quick, quick," he squeaked. "Come quickly, come quickly. The man has died. I was speaking to him. I told him the wrath of God would strike down his godlessness." And with that, he continued his run and dashed straight into an open elevator. Blindly, he stabbed out and managed to hit the down button. A nurse put her head around the corner and said, "What's the matter with that old creep? He's enough to give anybody a heart attack. Who was he talking to, anyway?" The orderly came around the corner from another ward and said, "I don't know, Molly Grubber, I suppose. Better go and see if he's all right." Together they went in to the private room. There they found Molly Grubber still clutching his chest. His eyes were half open. His mouth was sagging down. The nurse moved to the emergency button and pressed it with a special code. Soon the intercom in the hospital was broadcasting for Dr. So-and-so to come in emergency to that particular floor. "I suppose we'd better tidy him up a bit," said the nurse, "or the doctor will be commoting around us. Here is the doctor." The doctor came into the little room and said, "Oh, dear, dear, what's happened to this man? Look at the expression on his face. I really expected that within a few days we'd have him out again." "Oh, well." He moved forward and fished out his stethoscope, putting the earpieces in his ears, and then he unbuttoned Molly Grubber's pajamas and put the bell piece to the old man's chest and listened. His right hand reached out and felt for Molly Grubber's non-existent pulse. "Life is extinct, nurse. Life is extinct. I'll come out and do the death certificate. But in the meantime, have him taken down to the mortuary. We must have this bed ready, such is the shortage. Such a backlog of patients." And with that, he took the stethoscope out of his ears and let it dangle down his neck. He turned, made a note on Molly Grubber's chart, and then left. Together, the nurse and the orderly took the bedclothes off Molly Grubber, pulled up his pajama trousers and tied them, buttoned his pajama jacket across his chest. The nurse said, "You get the stretcher." The orderly went out and soon came back with the stretcher on which Molly Grubber had traveled from the wards to the X-ray. Together, the nurse and the orderly lifted the sheets on the stretcher to reveal, beneath the stretcher proper, another shelf. On this, they pushed Molly Grubber's body and strapped him in because it was not considered good to have dead bodies dropping on the floor. And then they let the sheets fall over the sides of the stretcher,
concealing the body completely. The orderly chuckled and said, "Wouldn't some of the visitors here throw a fit if they knew that this apparently empty stretcher has got a dead body on it?" With that, he pushed the stretcher out of the room and went whistling down the corridor to the elevators. He pushed basement and stood with his back to the stretcher as the elevator stopped at all floors and people got on and off. Eventually, on the ground floor, no one else got on, so they went down to the basement where he pulled the stretcher out. Turning it around, he went right down another corridor and rapped on the door, which was quickly opened. "Here's another one for you," said the orderly. "Just died up there. We brought him down right away. Don't think there'll be an autopsy. You better get doing him up properly." "Relatives?" asked the mortuary attendant. "Don't have none," said the orderly. "May have to be a potter's field job, or he's a city street cleaner. Maybe the city will pay to get him buried. Doubt it, though. They're a pretty cheapskate-ish lot." With that, he helped the mortuary attendant move the body from the stretcher and on to a mortuary table. Snatching up the sheet which had covered the body, the orderly turned and went out, whistling on his way. End of chapter 2.